Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast coming to you live out of King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street.
For now. Sorry.
Jesus, that was loud.
Sorry. Yeah, guys, we're moving.
King's Comics is moving.
Whoa.
We can't tell you where yet or when.
It's a secret location at a secret time, but it's happening at some point.
Remember where Seagull World used to be?
Oh, that would be so fucking good.
It's not there, but we got the dome. The Seagull World dome. This is a very Sydney-specific reference. It's also an old Sydney reference all of our young listeners won't even get. But there used to be this attraction in Darling Harbour. Mm-hmm. It was red and had it was called Seeger World. It was like an interactive virtual theme park.
Yep.
With lots of Seeger attractions, and there was a big blue dome. And Seeger went quickly out of business, and so it became like an underage rave party venue.
Oh my god!
It was
really?
A party they called Crush, and it was like pop and trance.
Wow.
Anyway, we got the dome, everybody. We got it. The King's Dome coming soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
To an undisclosed location.
And we're just going to put Jim in the dome.
But you know what hasn't moved, Siobhan?
What?
Kingscomics.com, and that's where you can find every single comic that we talk about on today's show, because that's what we do on this podcast. We talk about comics. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And every week we read all the comics that came out last week, let you know which are our favorites, and just give you a little bit of an update on what's going on in all the publishers.
Absolutely.
Because we try to read as many books as we are able to, although that number is becoming... happily for me,
just
a little bit smaller and smaller each week as I stop forcing myself to read books that I don't care about.
I am jettisoning series left, right, and center.
Series overboard. So we're going to kick off like we do every single episode by doing First Things First, in which we review all the new number one issues that came out last week. In case you've been living under a rock or don't read comics, you would have noticed that... Fantastic Four is back.
Back, baby.
They're back. The world's greatest comic magazine, as created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby all those years ago. The Marvel First Family, I think of all the weird things that we can describe.
The first family of Marvel.
The Future Foundation.
The
ever-loving thing.
Yeah, the horny human torch. Sorry. That's a part of his character.
Sorry, the grumpy invisible woman.
Does she like I'm always like, I want to love Sue Storm, but does she have any other, like, does she have a personality other than mum and sometimes likes to bone Namor? That's a good
that's a great personality,
actually. I take it back. Great.
The Namor boning invisible woman and the bad father.
The sometimes neglectful father. Mr. Fantastic.
Fantastic Four are back after a long hiatus away from Marvel, in which many people speculated it was because of the movies and they're not Disney not owning the rights to Fantastic Four, et cetera, et cetera. Also, it happened to coincide with the worst ever superhero movie, Fan-4-Stick, coming out. Did you see that?
Fan-4-Stick, is that what it's
called? Yeah, they replaced the second A with a 4.
Ah, right, okay. No, I didn't see it. I was like... excited about it because I liked the cast, but then I never watched it because hated it so much.
It's one of the... I remember leaving the cinema and going like, wow, But at that point, like, we hadn't had BVS yet.
Right, okay.
But I was like, oh, wow, I thought we worked out how to do these to at least an acceptably average level.
Yeah.
And...
why was it so bad?
It was...
What happened in it?
It's really short, which is normally a good thing.
I like that. That sounds nice.
But it just...
I'm sold.
Basically, like Dr. Doom, for example, he is made of organic matter, and he has an insane amount of power. He can like suck people's life forces from their thing. There's heaps of death in it. It's like,
who played
some
Dr.
guy?
Doom?
I can't remember. I just remember hating every second of it. And going like, wow, that's the first time since like Wolverine Origins that I was like, oh, that was not a good superhero movie at all.
Was it worse than the Jessica Alba as Sue Storm?
I mean, they're bad. They're bad, but at least they're kind of goofy and they know they're bad.
Yeah.
This had no idea it was bad. And it was like completely devoid of joy. And at the very end, they're like, hey, what should we call ourselves? And they're like, oh, something fantastic or something like awful like that. It's like, you can't just suddenly be happy now.
Yeah.
Your dad had his life sucked out of him by an organic Dr. Doom.
Hot.
Who you killed with rocks.
Oh, God. God. Sounds awful.
Not a good movie. But Fantastic Four, they're back in comic book form now.
They're generally a bit cheerier than that.
Yeah, and so this is a new creative team. It's Dan Slott with art by Sarah Pacelli and Simone Bianchi. And Scotty Young is on here as well.
Why?
He did a little bonus bit at the end. And we've got Marty Gracia on colors. So yeah, obviously a big... action-packed first issue to welcome the family back, in which they are not actually in it at all.
I mean, half of the fam are.
Yeah, sure. But half of the family have been in the Marvel Universe for for this entire time. So yeah, this basically catches up with Johnny and Ben.
And we still are missing Sue, Reed, Valeria, and Franklin.
That's right. And is Herbie around? I think Herbie's around. But yeah, so this... this book, I mean, we've been reading Marvel 2-in-1, which has been written by Chip Zdarsky and has kind of been the you know, Human Torch and the Thing team-up book, and really enjoying it. But when we last left that series, which I think still has issues coming out, Ben and Johnny are like stuck in another universe without their powers.
Yeah, what a surprise that Marvel have fucked up some timing shit.
Yeah, totally. So, and this kind of feels like the story that Chip should have been allowed to tell. So this is Johnny and Ben, you know... Ben finally admitting to Johnny that, like, you know, that he kind of did that in Chip's run, but basically like acknowledging that Johnny's sister and her family are dead or you know, missing for good.
But probably dead.
So there is a lot of emotional moments in that. Like he's tricked into thinking that that they're back because some goddamn Yancey Street kids,
fucking Yancey Street gang,
fire a big fiery four into the sky. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this.
Same.
We get a tease that at the end that there's a big signal in the sky that is in space that can be seen from Earth, a massive four, which must have been left by the Richards family.
We can see them doing it also.
Yes. But I just kind of feel like this was like it was a really nice, well-written story, and it kind of incorporated a lot of things, not just about the Fantastic Four, but also just Marvel Universe in general, and was kind of really well put together. I just feel like this is the story that Chip should have been allowed to tell in 2-in-1.
Yeah.
Instead of this being the start of this series, it should have been the end of his one.
Yes. Agreed. But Marvel are jerks, I suppose. Also, you didn't even mention the best bit of this, which is that the Thing finally proposes to Alicia.
That's right.
Yes.
His gal.
Yes.
Was
and then Johnny's a huge jerk.
Is it in Mark Miller's run that the Thing is going to get married, and then he speaks to all the other Marvel heroes who have lost their wives and is like, hey, this is a terrible idea. I'm not going to get married. I think it's
probably. Probably. Also, Doom is back in Latveria wearing a sexy skirt.
And
only a sexy skirt now.
He's got his nips out.
They're not scarred beyond recognition.
This. It looks like Doom is going to be evil-ish again. But, I mean, he's kind of always ambiguous. Yeah.
And he's, like, good in terms of Latveria. They're like, our savior has returned with his true face. He's not handsome anymore. He's fucked up again. That's what we like about him.
Yeah.
I think that this is, like, this is pretty much what I expected from a Dan Slott Fantastic Four book, you know? Like, it's sort of very family-focused. It's quite sweet. It didn't try and fucking rewrite something. I'm very tired, guys. But, you know, like it was a bit pain by numbers, but that's fine.
Yeah, definitely. I was wondering what kind of slot we were going to get on this. If we were going to get like the Spider-Man dance
sexy slot.
Or we were going to get the Silver Surfer
Ginger
kind of
slot.
Very kind of
scary slot.
Throwback. Sorry. Throwback. Scary slot. The kind of throwback to Silver Age or even Golden Age Silver Surfer comic that he did.
Yeah.
But it's somewhere in between. I think that works.
And Sarah Pacelli is very, very good. This is quite different from
Spider-Man. I'm not going to disagree with you at all. Yeah.
Style, but I think that she is a good sort of voice for this book.
She does a great thing. I don't know if I love her flamed on Johnny, but flamed off Johnny, I'm fine with.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know how I like my Human Torch to be drawn, but I don't think it's that.
You know who I would love to see draw a Human Torch is Treadmore.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see him on a
Fantastic Four. I think he would like do an amazing thing.
But the thing is, he would take a month to draw every panel featuring Johnny in it because there'd be so many tiny lines of fire.
Worth it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Excellent. Give us that, please.
Yes, please.
But yeah, until we get that, this will suffice. Fantastic Four number one gets a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I liked it.
Read it, guys. Probably.
I hope they're not double shipping this one. I bet they will, though.
I actually don't know. Do you know if this is being double shipped, Wayne?
Wayne? I don't know. He has no idea. Great.
Yeah, I don't know. Good job, as always. I don't really know why I asked.
Over to DC now, specifically their Vertigo imprint, and we get the return of a franchise of theirs that has been gone for a while too. Not really a franchise, but sure, let's call it a franchise.
It is a bit of a franchise.
The Sandman is back. Neil Gaiman's The Sandman is back for the Sandman universe one-shot, featuring contributions from Simon Spurrier, Nalo Hopkinson, Cat Howard, Dan Waters, Bilquis Everly, Dominique Domo Stanton, Tom Fowler, Max Fiamara, Sebastian Fiamara, and Matt Lopez.
I feel like this didn't get as much attention as I kind of thought it would. Has it, like...
Yeah, I don't know.
Sandman is such a huge deal and it's so beloved, but maybe all of the fans of the Sandman don't really read comics anymore.
Yeah, I think Sandman is a huge deal to people that have read three comics. It's that,
true.
Preacher,
yep,
and Mouse.
Yeah.
We did it. Maybe Watchmen. Oh, it's superhero comics aren't really for me, but I do love Watchmen.
Comics are for grown-ups now.
I like The Sandman. I've read in its entirety and some of the the spin-offs from it, a bit of Lucifer.
Loved Lucifer. Dead Boy Detectives, also great.
Yep.
Death Comics, also great.
And then we're also getting The Books of Magic, another Neil Gaiman franchise from the late 80s at Vertigo, coming back too. And so this one-shot kind of using a... like a book, it's bookended by a story written by Simon Spurrier,
who is such a good fit.
Sorry. Yes, definitely, and with art by Bilquis Everly, who's also an even better fit. Holy
amazing.
Fuck!
So,
and they're doing a book together. They're doing the main Sandman book, in which the Sandman has gone missing.
Oh no!
It's called The Dreaming.
Oh no!
What's annoying is that they kind of show you all these books, but they don't tell you what the creative teams are.
I know that did annoy me. But I think you can kind of figure it out.
Yeah. We're getting The Dreaming, written by Cy Spurrier and Bilquis Everly, which is going to be about, you know, what all these characters in the Sandman's kind of world, which is my favorite thing about the Sandman series. I love Lucien, the librarian.
Yep.
You have Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
One always trying to kill the other. You have, what's the pumpkin-headed guy's name? It's not Jack. That's too obvious.
George.
But anyway, and then of course you have the crow, the raven, one of the many ravens. This is kind of the sequence that kind of ties it all together is to basically different dreams that Matthew the raven is kind of popping into as he tries to find his master, the Sandman. I particularly loved catching up with all of the side characters from the Sandman stuff in the Cy Spurrier, Bilquis Everly's book. Her art is phenomenal.
So good, guys.
Like, I just...
She's such a huge talent.
She really is, and this is definitely going to be the book that everyone will take notice.
Yeah,
For
I
sure.
hope so. I thought this was really good. I think it's like the Sandman universe is very sort of broad and ambitious, and as much as I'm like, oh, I'd like to see these people play around with new things, it's cool to see them... you know, putting their own voice on things that are now like very much sort of comic book mythology. Like these are sort of core elements of comic books, Western comic books, I would say. Sandman is such a iconic series from an iconic time in comic books. It really made Vertigo a imprint that was worth paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've got an amazing creative team, book creative teams.
And obviously Gaiman kind of overlooking it all.
Absolutely. A creepy, creepy headmaster. The Lucifer story also looks exceptional. It looks great. I like how he looks like a sexy David Bowie there, and then like a Alan Moore.
I can't say I was too drawn into the story that they were teasing in that little short story for Lucifer. Mm. But look, we are going to give all of these series a shot. It's funny that I feel like Young Animal kind of wrapped up and then we get this immediately in its place. Yeah. It feels very thematically similar.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be better. maybe. Hopefully. Maybe. Fingers crossed. I think the books of magic and the dreaming are the two books that I'm looking forward to this. There is one that I am interested to see more of, which is the... Because is it set in like New Orleans?
Voodoo priests. Voodoo one?
Yeah. Interesting.
I think that one's going to be called House of Whispers.
House of Whispers. Love that cover.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, very exciting to kind of see more from Vertigo in general.
Yeah.
And then we also have all these other series launching. They're launching 7 other new series later in the year. So,
man, Mark Russell is the king of books that I'm like, I don't think I'm going to like that. And then I see his name on it. I'm like, I am going to enjoy that.
Yeah, definitely.
The Second Coming is by Mark Russell.
That's actually coming out in March next year.
Oh.
We're ages away from that.
No. But I'm very excited about Border Town as well. That's September 2018. That's soon. Yes, please.
With Ramon Villalobos and Tamara Bonvillain working together. Very exciting. Cool. Yeah, good to see Vertigo doing shit again.
Absolutely.
Never leave us.
Please.
Over to Boom Comics now, and we get the creative team that gave us Grass Kings, the
Secessionist.
Yes. It was beautifully illustrated by Tyler Jenkins, written by Matt Kent, colors by Hillary Jenkins. And I thought when they announced this, it was actually going to be a spin-off of the Grass King series.
This is much weirder.
It's called Black Badge, and it is about four Boy Scouts who are sent to infiltrate South Korea? North Korea, sorry.
North Korea,
they go while on a scout trip to South Korea. They split from their group and go on an espionage mission into North Korea.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, what if scouts were also scouts? You know what I mean? Like, the final badge that they have to get is the badge of being like black ops operatives, because no one notices 4 small boys. Anyway, I sort of thought this was like, I wanted it to take itself slightly less seriously.
It felt like
it was a very, very straight look at something that is very, 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 very silly in its basic concept.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I don't heaps know if this is for me.
This could be a lot more fun. And yeah, Grass King certainly started out like there were a lot of kind of fun elements to that story. It wasn't over the top dark, but that became a very dark story as it went on. This looks to kind of out the gates to be a pretty somber affair from Matt Kent. I definitely prefer it when he allows more whimsy into his stories.
Absolutely.
But that Jeff Lemire variant cover is excellent.
It's very nice. And the colors are like gorgeous. Always beautiful watercolors. And it's like it's a good looking book, but it's just very silly. Very silly. I want it to be more silly or less silly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The current level of silliness is not appropriate.
Up the silly, please.
Please.
That's Black Badge from Boom Comics. You going to read another issue or two of this?
Nah.
Okay, there you go. Surprise favorite number one for me this week.
Ah, okay. I didn't read this because I was like, ugh, I just can't. Can't be fucked.
Came from Aftershock, and it is a crime comic called Hot Lunch Special, and it's written by Elliot Rahal.
It has a sandwich with fingers in it.
Jorge Fornes. The opening scene is an off-duty highway patrol cop. Eating a sandwich which has a finger in it.
Mm.
And we then...
On purpose or by accident?
Well, it's not really 100% answered. Right. We do know who the finger belongs to because this book is about a Lebanese mob, essentially.
Oh, cool.
Who also run a sandwich business.
Cool.
And their business is kind of like... It's set in the Dakotas,
mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of Fargo-isms. It felt very Fargo-y in time. You have the
cops
investigating these strange gangs. And a lot of it is told from the point of view of a young boy who works in a sandwich shop and at the start of the comic is telling his class in like a show and tell the history of the sandwich shop, and he's sparing no details and talking about all the mob figures in his family. It's fantastic. It's really well done.
Cool.
The art is wonderful. Kind of grittier Mike Allred.
Yeah, gorgeous.
The writing was excellent. I thought this was This was just a really, really brilliant first issue. I love crime books.
Yeah.
And this one ends on a fucked cliffhanger. So I'm absolutely hooked. This was
not cool. I'm disappointed that I didn't pick that up.
I'll let you read it while I edit this episode if you like. But yeah, this is my you may have missed this one.
Yeah.
Definitely picked this one up. I was expecting to love Black Badge, and this one I was kind of like, you know, Aftershock are pretty hit and miss when it comes to comics that are for me, and this one's extremely for me.
I thought the cover was so not for me that I was like,
definitely.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like Chew or something like
The beef. The cover's like the beef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't like I don't like people eating people.
Okay, I'm pretty okay with that, to be honest. It's one of my things. But yeah, this is a great book. It's called Hot Lunch Special, and I'm hoping they can follow up this excellent issue with a great series following this one.
Yeah.
Very quickly, we both picked up and took home the newest one by Howard Chaykin, Hey Kids Comics, which I thought was going to be like a brutal takedown of the comics industry and cons and all that kind of thing by the pretty goofy cover. But upon opening it, it's kind of Howard Chaykin's retelling of like the comic book industry and the largely Jewish kind of
loves the past.
But I've heard some good reports from people that enjoyed this comic. I just looked at it and I was like, I can't do another comic by Chaykin, who has kind of done some dodgy things in the last couple of years, released some dodgy things, but also every single character looks exactly the same.
I know.
And I just can't do it.
I think that now it looks like, at the very least, his work is like colored digitally, and I think it looks just wonky.
Yeah.
And I just don't like it.
I loved his work on Satellite Sam with Matt Fraction.
I bet you did. I can't even remember. There was some like fucked up shit with that. They released a Tijuana Bible.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's, you would love that series.
Yeah,
it's your kind of smut.
Disgusting, yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
So yeah, that's Hey Kids Comics if you want to go check that out if you are a fan of Chaykin. So that is it for First Things First. Not that many number ones this week, but my favorite this week was definitely Hot Lunch Special. I love being taken by surprise by a book that I have no idea about.
Yeah, cool.
And of course, Fantastic Four and the Sandman Universe books were really good too.
Absolutely.
Now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Image, Marvel, or DC. If you want to come and discuss any of those series or find out more about any of the books that we talked about, feel free to come and ask us all the questions you'd like to ask us in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. While you're here and we're talking about links, why don't you check out our Patreon for two very cool bonus episodes that we did in the last couple months. They are very in-depth, nice and long spoiler episodes all about two recent Image books that we loved. One of them finished, the other one is going on a hiatus for a year or so. They are Kill or Be Killed by Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips, and Elizabeth Brightriser, and Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples.
Levin's cried.
I cried. If you want to hear me crying in an episode of Serious Issues, the only way you can hear that, and like full on, like unable to talk, crying. Patreon.com/HeyFanPodcast. I loved recording that, and it's something we're going to try and be doing every month or so, or every other month when we do our kind of graphic novel wrap-ups. Mm-hmm. I've not been reading many graphic novels lately. I've got a massive stack.
Tons.
Really? Okay. We need to do that next week then. But yeah, Patreon.com/SeriousIssuesPodcast is where you go to get a whole bunch of bonus material by us. And while you listen to all that bonus material, you do so with the knowledge that you have helped two struggling parents put pies on the table for another week. Just pies. No one even eats them. It's just just stack them up. And
we got to have them.
We need them. So please give us some pie money. Serious Issues. Patreon.com/SeriousIssuesPodcast. Now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Image, Marvel, or DC. Thank you very much to Brad Love for providing us with this very fancy three-sided die. I'm going to roll a Marvel first. And dropped on the ground. Image. So Marvel, then Image, and then DC.
Nice.
Marvel, let's talk about Amazing Spider-Man.
Okie doke. Wasn't a big Marvel week, lovely.
Two Spider-Mens. Because at the end of the last issue, Spider-Man came face to face with Peter Parker, which is a fun trope that has happened throughout many runs of Spider-Man.
This is the first time when I've read it, and it's like a literal split.
Yeah.
So,
using some accidental crazy technology, Peter Parker and Spider-Man are two separate entities.
Yeah, and it's like the literal same thing that turned him into a man spider, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
it's the same machine.
Same machine. So
turn that machine off, friends.
Written by Nick Spencer with excellent art, just the best art,
just
by
the best.
Ryan Ottley. He's just so well matched to this book. Inks by Cliff Rathburn and colors by Laura Martin. It's a great creative team. Nick Spencer has really found his groove with this book.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fun thing to do with Spidey, I guess. So Spider-Man has all the spider powers, obviously, but then Peter Parker realizes that he also has all of his science knowledge as well.
Yes.
And then, at the end of the issue, we learn that that he's literally, like, Peter Parker has all the responsibility and Spider-Man has all the power.
Yep. It's pretty funny. Like, I like it as a... it is, like, comic book ambitious, you know what I mean? Like, it's the kind of thing that could only happen in a comic book, in, like, a funny sort of big symbolic... but they're also literally split kind of way. And I'm into that. I thought this was good and silly. I still think Nick Spencer could just turn down the dialogue like 5%.
Yeah.
Just slightly less dialogue, slightly less sort of pop culture references. I know that's like my personal bugbear, but just like, you don't have to reference fucking Arrested Development. Like, why are you dating your comic that quickly, bro?
Spider-Man and Peter Parker, two of the most talky characters in the Marvel Universe, though. And so when you split them, you have two very talky characters talking to each other.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a responsibility-less Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Spider-Man.
But also, can he take his mask off?
Well, he doesn't in this, so I guess not. Mm. Yeah. That'd be funny if he takes it off and it's just full of spiders.
He's like a literal man spider.
So that's Amazing Spider-Man number 3. I'm enjoying this series. It is one of the ones where I am nearing the point where it's, you know, it is a double shipping one, so I'm like, oh, I don't like Spider-Man that much, but it's been fun so far.
Yeah,
I'll keep reading.
It's been fun. I'll keep going. Might as well.
We got the final issue of The Hunt for Wolverine: The Adamantium Agenda.
Is
one of the many miniseries. Yo, this was fucking great. Written by Tom Taylor with art by R.M. Silva. And R.B. Silva, sorry. And inks by Adriano Di Benedetto. Colors by Guru FX. So this series kind of dealt with a lot of the new Avengers characters dealing with... basically trying to track down Wolverine. All these little mini-series are different groups of mutants or superheroes trying to find Wolverine now that he's returned to the Marvel Universe and no one knows if he's a good guy or a bad guy. This dealt with it in a really fun way in that it sent Tony Stark, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Spider-Man to an auction where people were auctioning off the DNA of a certain mutant, and everyone thought it was going to be Wolverine, but it turned out to be the DNA of Jess Jones and Luke Cage's daughter.
Has she got confirmed powers yet?
No. It wasn't actually a mutant. It was just like, you know, a high, I don't know, whatever. Anyway.
Just a baby. You guys want this baby's DNA?
It turns out that Mr. Sinister has been, has like a database of everyone's DNA, like every superhero's DNA.
Oh, no.
And had this really great kind of, every one of these issues opened with a conversation between Wolverine and Tony Stark where Wolverine basically had to kind of sacrifice himself to detonate a bomb.
Right.
Because he's, you know, he's
not really a sacrifice.
Exactly. As he does that, he's not sure if this may kill him, this bomb.
Right.
And so he's like, Tony, like, you know, if this does kill me, I want you to make sure that, you know, you don't tamper with my body in any way. Because, you know, I want you to promise me you never will do that. Because when I was looking at that bomb, I saw something, and it was the Stark Industries logo on it. Even if you didn't make that bomb, you know,
you just contributed tampering. In
exactly.
some way.
And so there was this really nice moment where you think, like, Mr. Sinister is like basically praying to Tony Stark, like, please, for the science, don't destroy my work. And Tony Stark like remembers that and goes, light her up, everyone.
Nice.
But before he does that, he did get two interesting little tidbits of information. The first is that Laura, X-23, is not just a clone of Logan. She has as much DNA of her, the scientist who carried her to term. What's her name? Sarah Kinney. So she's a clone of both of them, which is cool. And then the coolest thing and great little thing to set up as a mystery for the future is that one of the X-Men isn't a mutant. And that someone's been genetically altered to appear to be a mutant, and Tony Stark thinks that the X-Men might have a sleeper agent.
Ooh.
So it is like really fun. And it was it made me like, whereas the last one that I read, I was like, this whole thing was pointless. Mm. This set up lots of fun stuff for the future and had a lot of worth to it as a comic. So
Tom Taylor just understands.
He does. He really is like one of my favorite writers now.
He's good.
He just knows how to write a good superhero book that like, you know, appeals to the fun action side of things, but also has a lot of heart and a lot of kind of like depth as far as storytelling and yeah.
But also, and I mean this in like a positive way, they're like a bit disposable. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not heaps like, Tom Taylor books are like classics that I will reread for generations, but they are great, like
solid superhero storytelling. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yep, totally. You don't need every comic to be this groundbreaking thing. I just want, he's like, he makes really good comfort food.
Yes.
And yeah, definitely. Go Tom Taylor. That was The Adamantium Agenda from the Hunt for Wolverine miniseries. I didn't read any of the other ones, so that'll be the last you hear of that.
Yeah,
until the next Wolverine miniseries jumps out in a few weeks' time. Anyway.
That's
my ass. Siobhan, unfortunately, Domino is a book that did not survive the cut this week for me. I got pages in and I was just like, I don't remember who any of these characters are again. But it's written by Gail Simone with art by Michael Shelfer, David Baldion, and Jesus Albertov. This is issue number 5 and follows the life of Domino and her weird crew.
Her crew of best friends and the...
Shang-Chi.
Yeah, so Domino is hanging out with Shang-Chi, 50% trying to bang, 50% trying to learn how to control her luck powers because she's never been able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And she is being targeted by... So Domino is a character who was raised in like a evil science facility, as many superheroes are. And it was something like her powers were connected to some other kids. And so if they like hurt that kid, her powers... would work or something.
Yeah.
And that kid has grown up and like, I'm going to come fuck you up.
Because her powers are like good luck powers. Every time she has good luck, he has bad luck, basically. Yes. Yeah.
And I just love Gail Simone. She's very funny. She's very dirty. She is willing to melt someone's face half off. It's very disgusting.
Uh huh.
It's a good comic. I wish the covers weren't by Greg Land.
Yeah.
But other than that, I have a good time with this every single time. It's not groundbreaking, but it's good, fun superhero fare that you can just get through quite quickly, and the art's very nice.
There you go.
Colors are a bit funny, I would say.
Who's Desmond?
Desmond is, I don't know.
He's the guy whose face gets melted off.
Yes, Desmond. So he's the kid who has a bad luck.
Oh, suck it, Desmond.
Suck it, Desmond.
The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, issue number 35, came out this week, featuring writing by Ryan North, art by Derek Charm, colors by Rico Renzi. And this is the finale of the Kraven the Hunter story, in which Squirrel Girl attempts to kind of hang out with him and ensure that he's being a good guy and not a bad guy. But of course, even after they do some good, Kraven is seen by the cops and then they help him escape. And then this is basically a fight between Spider-Man and Kraven the Hunter, with Squirrel Girl acting as mediator between them. And
I love how compelling he manages to make a fight scene with no fighting.
Yes, definitely.
Like just Squirrel Girl being...
whipped up.
Talking.
Yes, definitely. I said at the last issue, I was like, I don't know, I feel like this arc is kind of dragging, but this is just a joy of an issue to read.
Really good. And the key thing that I got out of this, I really feel like Derek Charm has... found his groove with this series.
Yes.
But man, I want to see him do a Spider-Man book. He understands the physicality of Spidey so well. I think he would be perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
One of my favorite supporting characters in the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl comics is Brain Drain, who is a brain in a jar on a body.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a big heroic moment in this issue, and I laughed my entire way through it.
Yep.
It was just so joyous.
Yeah, Brain Drain is one of the funniest.
Yeah, really good issue. And this, if you've been like umming and ahhing about, you know, should I be reading this Squirrel Girl book that like is mixed reviews depending on if you like good comics or bad comics, but I think this was a great arc to kind of, even though it doesn't feature the excellent art of Erica Henderson, I think this from a story point of view, this is a great solid arc from
absolutely
a longer arc than what they normally would do too. The finale of Kraven.
Oh, I didn't even see the 2 weeks later bit at the end.
Oh, so Kraven.
Oh my God.
Kraven becomes a hero and like leaves a crook tied up with a post-it note that says "Attention, police." And when they answer, when they pick it up, he's signed it, "The Unhuntable Sergey." That's his new name. Make that canon.
Yes, please.
I'm done with Craven Hunting. Yeah. Make him the Unhuntable Sergey. That's an amazing name. He looks fantastic too.
He sure does.
Good issue.
Absolutely.
Finally, from Marvel, I read issue 19 of Star Wars: Darth Vader, written by Charles Soule, with art by Giuseppe Camuncoli, and finishes by Danielle Orlandini, colors by David Curiel. And this is just more of Darth Vader killing Jedi and just being awful and threatening. And it's really, really good, into a great groove. And Giuseppe Camuncoli is just the perfect artist for this book. It always looks great and really unique, like true to itself. It doesn't just look like, you know, every other kind of Star Wars bit of media. It really, he really does. He lets his own kind of drawing style shape the book. Charles Soule writes, even though you know he's always going to do like the worst thing you can think of, Charles Soule still manages to write a very unpredictable Darth Vader, which is cool. Maybe it's the situations he puts him in that are unpredictable as opposed to his character decisions.
Impressive.
Yeah. So really, really fun series. I'm enjoying it quite a lot. It's the only Star Wars book I'm reading now.
Did we say Image next?
Yep, Image is next, and we say farewell to a couple of series. One of them is one of our favorite books from the last year. And
is this the last issue?
Yeah. Oh. I'd say so, right?
Well, I don't know.
It certainly felt like the absolute finale of it.
Maybe. I would have liked a letter at the end.
Yeah, I hate it when a last issue comes out and there's no fanfare.
Yeah,
give me a letter.
I want to hear your thoughts about it, mate.
Steve Skros is the writer of the excellent book Maestros. He's also the artist, and Dave Stewart and Phonographics round out this creative team. Stewart on colors, Phonographics on lettering. It is about, Siobhan?
It is about a human boy whose father comes from an alternate dimension where magic rules, and his dad is the ruler of that, called the Maestro. And then the dad and every single other person who could possibly be Maestro is killed. And so the boy has to come to the magic universe and finally become Maestro. And he's this kind of Neil Gaiman looking hapless but super smart kid. It's very, he's sort of, that sounds cuntier than I meant it to. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
he's a nice character. He is funny and he is compelling. And there's a lot of funny moments in the book,
mm-hmm.
as well as sweet moments.
I just looked this up, and it's the end of story arc A. Okay. I thought it read like a proper finale, but if it did, like, you know, it is a pretty nice ending to it.
Yeah,
I hope they collect all these 7 issues in a trade.
Mm-hmm.
This book ends with opens with the end of the universe, and we see how the Maestro tricks the universe to come back, and it's pretty funny and involves modern technology.
Yep, but in a way that I didn't hate.
Yes, definitely.
Impermanent death is in this universe as well.
Yes, pretty much every character has met their end at some point during the series, some of them multiple times in many gory, funny ways. Steve Skros's art is phenomenal.
So gorgeous. So gorgeous.
He's great at drawing enormous, destructive, gory moments of violence, but then also wonderful, colorful magic stuff and brilliant
men who are also sunflowers.
Yes, and brilliant expressions of fantasy emotion.
Yes,
I love all the flashback sequences too, and as we learn the connection that the big bad has to the Maestro himself.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, really fulfilling series and one that was filled with lots of laughs at first, and then never really let go of that as it told quite an epic story.
Absolutely. I always think it's like a bit of a grown-up Terry Pratchett vibe. So if you like Terry Pratchett but wish it had more boobs and swearing, I think you will
every single
very
day.
Much enjoy this.
Yeah. Great issue. And hopefully we see Arc B come back.
Yes, please.
Very soon. Eternal Empire was another book that this is definitely its conclusion because it had the word conclusion on the front cover.
Nice.
Of issue 10, written by Jonathan Luna and Sarah Vaughan, with art by Jonathan Luna. This was the kind of fantasy book in which two children from two different tribes escape the slavery roles that they were in because they see visions of dragons in their dreams. And when they eventually meet up, they realize that when they're together, they're able to conjure these like blades of energy, and they are linked to dragons that they meet. But there is a third dragon, and she is linked to basically like the kind of queen who mm-hmm. is ensuring everyone lives horrible, horrible lives and in slavery, etc. And so this was like the final showdown between the three of them. Yeah, they do, but it's a bittersweet ending as they realize that even in spite of you know, them winning, they did so in a way that makes the world still scared of them. Yeah. So their future is a little bit up in the air. That's me being as kind of like open as possible. I feel like you could definitely read the book and be very invested in the ending. Mm. I really didn't spoil it. But this is a cool book. I didn't love it as much as their last series together, Alex and Ada.
Yeah.
Which is,
I would quite like to go back because I fell off this because I missed a couple of issues, and I would quite like to go back and reread it because it's a style of fantasy that I usually enjoy.
Yeah, it's definitely a character-focused fantasy too, which is what I like the most as opposed to world-focused fantasy because like, oh, there's too many fucking kinds of people.
Too many elves. You racist.
I'm racist to elves. Great. Alex and Ada is a great book by the same creative team that I highly recommend too. But this will read really well in trade.
It's about fucking robots.
Yeah, it's such a thrilling story by the end. It becomes an action.
Also romantic.
Yeah, that's great. But yeah, this is really, really good. Eternal Empire. Loved it. Really enjoyed it.
Speaking of fucking.
Wow, you're still reading this guy.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I read issue 2 of Unnatural by Mirka Andolfo because it is like a female gaze sexy book. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Mirka Andolfo is a Italian woman, and this is a book about anthropomorphized animals who live in a world in which it is illegal to be in a relationship outside of your species. And if you hit 25 and you are not in a long-term relationship with someone from your species, you are like sent to a special dating place where you will be paired up with your appropriate person.
And it's kind of like a breeding camp, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is it's like a semi, you know, racism commentary, blah, blah, blah. Reminds me of The Lobster, that movie with what's his face, but with like sexy pigs.
Cool.
And in this, we find out more history of our main character. There's like some weird shit going on. I like this. It's like silly. The art's good. It's like a furry book, but... nothing wrong with that, I guess.
Siobhan's a fairy, everybody.
I'm a fairy now. You're welcome.
This episode is called Siobhan's a fairy.
But I like this a lot.
Yeah. Well, let me know if I should jump back on it.
Look, I mean, it's. I wouldn't say this is like essential reading for anyone, but it is like, it's a romance story. It's something very different from Image, and it's had like a really big response.
Oh, cool.
Which is cool. I like that. It's a one person's vision, female led, blah, blah, blah.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Pass it over here. You also read Death or Glory, the recommender book.
Which, about the cool female driver, car driver, drives cars. This is written by Rick Remender with art by Bengal, who is, I think, so, so good. And so this book sees our driver lady team up with a dude to rescue his niece from what is probably there's nuns in it, and they're putting her into sex slavery.
Right.
I couldn't think of the right way.
Nunnery.
Yeah, that's what a nunnery is. Convent. No, it's not.
Convent.
but like a sex convent. Anyway, and our driver's ex-boyfriend is a mad drug dealer, and so she's going to steal money from him so that she can pay for her dad's liver transplant.
Okay.
And it's good. This is like a real big shoot 'em up issue with lots of like really amazing, impactful car driving scenes. Oh my God, I'm so brain dead today. Anyway, I really genuinely enjoy this. I think it's good fun. The art's really dynamic.
You also don't drive. So
I also don't drive.
That's why
drive.
It's funny to hear you talking about
yeah, car driving.
Trying to like what is expand your vocabulary.
Driving seems scary. I don't like wheels. Anyway, this is good.
This book isn't doing anything to help your fears either.
No, it's not. But maybe if I learned how to drive, I could look like a cool car lady.
Mm.
Mm. Anyway.
Final image book for today is Farmhand, issue number 2, written and drawn by Rob Gilroy, who was best known for his work as the artist on Chew. John Layman was the writer of that series, and I've kept up with a lot of his series since Chew. I was a big fan of the Chew series. I think it got better and better as it went on. John Layman's books have been very, very different since from Chew since he finished that series. He has but done a few in the kind of the comedy realm, but he also did that excellent Eleanor the Egret.
Oh yeah, God, that was so weird. Eleanor and the Egret with Sam Keith.
Yeah, that was great. But aside from that, I haven't really enjoyed much of what I've read of his, but I do give everything a shot because he's a good writer. Mm. But with this issue of Farmhand, in which it's about a man reuniting with his father after being estranged from him for many years, but his father is kind of like leading a new study.
His dad has a farm where he grows like
human
new
body parts,
noses and kidneys and stuff for people on trees.
And there's like lots of like shady stuff in their past, and also in what his father is currently up to at the moment, people out to get him and that kind of thing. But I think this really feels like a spiritual successor to Chew.
Yeah.
Not just from a writing, an art point of view, but definitely from an art point of view too.
Yeah.
A writing point of view too. It really, really scratched that itch that has been missing since that series finished.
But it is like it's good fun. I like this more than I think I'm going to every single time, because it's a bizarre concept, and the art's not necessarily something that would normally appeal to me personally, but I do like it, and it's such a strong sort of family story, and the characters are interesting, and the basic idea is like so weird and funny. I'm into it.
Gilroy is a cartoonist, like it is very, very exaggerated comedic cartooning, but he goes all the way with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have very, very stylized, exaggerated faces and funny expressions on almost every character. But, like, it's just that's just his style. And you get used to it very, very quickly. And it's some excellent cartooning in this series.
Absolutely.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, Farmhand.
Check it out.
Gory.
Now we're talking about DC books.
I read a lot of DC books this week for some reason.
Do you want to start with the first one we talk about?
Yeah.
Catwoman. How about that?
Yeah, let's talk about Catwoman.
Catwoman, issue number 2, written and drawn by Joelle Jones, with colours by Laura Alred. This is kind of, after she did not marry Batman, Catwoman goes to another city in America
to try and forget her woes.
And she finds a bunch of other women dressing up as herself in Catwoman gear, which may have been, they may have been put up to by the mayor.
But the mayor's wife, who is like a scary lady who puts on her face every morning in like the most literal sense, like constructs a new beautiful face for her, and then is like this horrifying monster at the end of the day, and seems to be trying to control everything from behind the scenes. But her husband appears to be trying to
either a mayor or a senator. I don't know, whatever he is, but
maybe some kind of politics bro,
government hack. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was a mostly like the first half of it is a really exciting action sequence in which Catwoman just fights other Catwomen for eight pages.
Good. It's so good.
And it's great to see Joelle Jones just let loose and draw just really, really awesome action.
And just the variety of faces and expression and body types.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's so amazing. And the colors are gorgeous.
Yeah, colors are really, really great. Really different to everything else that Joelle Jones has done in the past.
It's too good to be a superhero book. I know that's like a dumb thing to say, but it doesn't even feel...
Oh, no, it feels like a Vertigo or an Image book because it's quite the story-wise, it's a very slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know what the plot is. We just know the characters in it so far.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of get hints as to what might come in the future, but there's no kind of semblance of what Catwoman's motivations are besides just not being married to Bruce Wayne.
Yep. She's just trying to forget her Forget her troubles by stealing a bunch of shit. Classic Catwoman. But I loved, like, her sort of sleeping in a warehouse surrounded by, like, statues and antiquities that she's stolen. It's my favorite kind of Catwoman.
So I don't know who at DC has decided that every single one of their books needs to have a minimum of two double-page ads in them now. And make sure you pick the most pivotal moment in the book, like where you turn the page expecting to see like the answer to a cliffhanger, but instead you get like a massive two-page ad for a book that, like, no, some of them maybe you're already reading at the time.
Yeah. DC have the worst ad placement, I think, of any comic book company ever. I find them constantly disruptive.
That's probably why a lot of people read digitally.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that there. Yeah, I could get that out of the way now. Let's talk about Plastic Man, issue number 3, another book written by Gail Simone this week. This one features art by
Adriana Mello
and colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick.
All female team, yes please.
Very cool.
Love it.
I did not love this issue.
Oh yeah?
I really loved the last two. I just, I don't know. I guess it's the characters. I like Plastic Man. I just don't care about any of the other characters in this series.
I like the strippers and the small girl.
Sure.
I like her. I like, I like it. I think it's funny. It's silly. It's good. Like, it's got the kind of Gail Simone balance of fairly grim stuff and action happening while also being very deftly balanced with really funny moments. I think that she understands Plastic Man really well, and, like, there are some great moments that they use his physicality really well. I like this a lot.
There are sweet moments in it. And I will read this till the end because we're at the halfway point now. But, yeah, I wasn't super into this issue.
Fair enough. It was a bit of an in-between issue.
Yeah, definitely. What should we talk about next, Siobhan?
Should we Detective? Talk about... Yes, please.
Detective Comics, issue 986, written by Brian Hill, with art by Philippe Briones. I didn't enjoy this art as much as I have the artists in the last few issues. But,
no.
It wasn't bad.
No, it's
colors
still
by
good.
Adriano Lucas. And this is basically a...
It's The Outsiders.
Yeah, Batman is called over Black Lightning from Metropolis to come and babysit Duke, Barbara, and Cassandra.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, he has to deal with a villain that wants to kill all of Batman's Bat family because they make him weak.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a really fun issue.
Yeah.
The first kind of like straight up action kind of issue of the run so far.
Yep.
And featured a great, if you're a fan of Cassandra Cain, being
Which
a hero.
Which I am.
Being a hero with very few words. This had some great scenes with her in it.
I think that Brian Hill is using Black Lightning really well. I like that we get Katana at the end of this issue.
Yeah,
literally
totally.
Just getting the Outsiders together, and I'm here for it.
Who was in the Outsiders? It was Katana.
Katana, was it, Black was
it,
Lightning.
Was it Metamorpho? Was
he Geoforce? No.
Geoforce, no.
And I think maybe I don't know about Metamorpho.
Yeah, right, sure.
Geoforce is Terra from the Teen Titans, brother. He's a prince.
Cool.
Of a random Eastern European country.
I look forward to seeing him show up. But yeah, I mean, like, I have no really connection to Katana as a character. And especially after the Suicide Squad
she
movie.
She wants to do it with her sword, right?
It was awesome just to see her kind of show up as like someone that is going to teach Batman how to fight. It was great. I love it when, you know, like Batman calls in someone to teach him something as opposed
to,
you know, come and help me solve this crime, whatever. You know they will anyway.
Yeah.
But it is fun. I like, you know, when Batman becomes a student.
Absolutely.
Fun
Good
shit.
Fun.
Yeah. Fun series. I'm enjoying where Brian Hill has taken this. It doesn't feel too different to James Tynion IV. Like, it doesn't feel like drastically different, but it's a nice change.
Absolutely.
Bendis is back, everybody. Superman. Bendis is coming. He's come. He's came. He came. Superman issue number 2. It came out this week with art by Ivan Reyes, and this is a book that he is much more suited to than the Terrifics, first and foremost.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm still not the biggest fan of his art, but it definitely works a lot more on a Superman book than it does on something trying to be a bit left of center or throwbacky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this also featured inks by Joe Prado and Eau Claire Albert, and
you
colors
by... You can definitely
by...
tell the Joe Prado inks. It makes it look a bit more like 90s, I reckon.
Yep. And colors by Alex Sinclair. This was the first book from Bendis' Superman stuff so far. We've gotten, what, 3 issues of action and 2 of Superman plus the Man of Steel event. So, like, 10 issues in so far into his run that I was kind of like, whatever. But it wasn't bad. It was just a bit whatever.
Yeah, it was a bit of a, like, in-between issue. So, like, the whole of the Earth is inside the Phantom Zone. And now, slowly, people are, like, falling apart because we're not, like, under Earth's sun anymore and gravity isn't a thing and we're not in our universe, so everything's kind of falling apart. And Superman's a bit like, oh, I don't really know what to do, which I think is that's a good problem for Superman. This is
yeah,
the
definitely.
Kind of Superman problem I yeah, like definitely. To see him solve.
So I think where in the past I've gone like, oh, Bendis in the past is on issues like this, and I was happy that this was just kind of like fine.
Yeah.
As opposed to like just trying to milk the most out of nothing to do a filler issue, he made it a pretty compelling filler issue.
Yeah, totally. I think it was a good issue.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
You got some other DC books that I did not read this week.
Yes, so I read Supergirl because it's the first issue.
It's by Mark Andraeco.
Mark Andraeco with art by Kevin Maguire.
How hard is it to put girls on this book?
Man, it's fucking impossible. Turns out. No,
we got Supergirl being super,
which was
Joelle Jones,
super,
and what's her name, Mariko Tamaki. That was awesome, but that wasn't even in continuity.
Yeah, look.
Why wouldn't they have kept Tamaki around to do the regular in continuity Supergirl?
Because Marvel snapped her up,
yeah,
like fucking the smart people that they are. Because, and this is a key point that I make all the time, but Marvel have female editors, and DC do not have female editors, especially in the Superman office. And I think that makes a big difference.
Definitely.
But I like Kevin Maguire. Big fan of Justice League International. So I wanted to check this out.
Oh, shit. How does it look?
Fucking great. It looks really good. I really like it. And this is like Supergirl who is sort of dealing with some shit, you know? Like she really saw Krypton blow up in a way that Superman didn't because he was a baby. She saw her whole family die.
Mm.
And now she's had to deal with the trauma of the Bottle City of Kandor being destroyed and all of her remaining family dying.
So this spins out pretty much immediately after Man of Steel.
Yes. And so this is Supergirl deciding that she is going to go into space with Krypto, yes please, to try and track down what really happened to Krypton and this bro who Superman is fighting in the main Superman series, what he knows, and did he really kill all of Krypton? What's going on? Anyway, she's out for vengeance, and I think it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, cool.
It was a good first. It was a great first issue, like of an arc, and the art. I really like the art. I think it looks strong.
I might try and read this before the next issue comes out. If this is going to be a monthly, this could be a fun one to read.
Yeah.
I just love Krypto.
Yeah, I love Krypto. I love the idea of Supergirl and Krypto in a rocket ship, traveling through space, having adventures.
A dog
having
in a cape.
Vengeance adventures.
A dog in a cape is all I need.
Absolutely. And I've got a book here, which I think you're going to be mad at yourself for not reading, because this is the next issue of Steve Orlando's in-between run on Wonder Woman.
Yep, before G. Willow Wilson takes over.
And so this is the first of, I would assume, a two-issue arc called Enemy of Both Sides. And it's got art by your bro, ACO.
ACO. Last scene on. These guys work together on Midnighter.
Mm-hmm.
ACO is fucking great.
Yep.
Was this to your taste this time? Or
yes.
Okay, cool.
I like this issue a lot. And so this is Wonder Woman teaming up with Artemis and Aztec, the character, the Grant Morrison character.
Oh, great.
And so this is like the
Grant
original
Morrison and Mark Miller, they did
yes.
it together.
The original Aztec is dead and it's now a woman. Great. Excellent. And so it is Artemis, Wonder Woman, and Aztec teaming up to rescue Wonder Woman's aunt.
Fuck, look at that art.
I know. Really,
oh
really
my
gorgeous.
God, that
a
looks...
a Themyscira'an who has been trapped in like a mythological, crazy, Kirby fucking Aztec dimension.
Oh, there's so little dialogue.
There's
so
a lot
on board.
Of action. The relationship between Wonder Woman and Artemis is great. I love this new female Aztec. I hope she gets used. The costume is great. I wish I got to wear a big spiky helmet all the time. I really, really, really rate this issue. I think it's the best thing I've read that Steve Orlando's done in a really long time.
Amazing.
And I love the art on it.
ACO, or Aiko, however you want to say his name, he's king
Wonder
of
Woman
like over the top breakout panels and like, you know, really turning the space in between each panel into something novel and crazy.
Mm-hmm,
and sometimes it can be over the top and maybe not work for the story, but this looks like it's just really, really suited to the story. You have like Aztec art taking, oh man, looks so good. I'm definitely reading this one as soon as we finish recording. That looks so good.
Yeah, really, really good.
The Enemy of Both Sides. Cool. Good shit.
Yeah.
Over to Wildstorm now for Michael Cray, issue number 10, written by Brian Hill, with art by N. Stephen Harris. And this series started out as Michael Cray, every two issues, facing a different like, you know, alternate version of one of the main DC heroes and essentially having to take them out.
I slightly missed that.
Well, that's what I was going to get at. Like, the first few issues was, like, him taking out Green Arrow and the Flash and Aquaman. And for the last, like, five or six issues, we've gotten just kind of him. It's much slower. It's about him and John Constantine and Diana Prince. And has a lot more to do with, like, the origin of his powers and the secret societies that he's worked with. And it's still solid, but I miss how fun this book was when it started.
The action scenes are still great. Like, the Diana Prince sort of fight scene, I think, is excellent.
Yeah, really cool.
And I wish I understood the reveal. I'm sure that's, like, a wild, stormy thing that I don't really get.
Well, the real reveal is that there's, like, you know, there's an alien inside of him. Yeah.
There's an alien inside of all of us.
I don't think there's anything more than that, really. It's just like he's finally going to find out what's in his head and what his powers can have him do. Yep. I guess
that's pretty good.
Yeah, there's only two issues left, but I kind of wish it stuck to that format of, like, just Michael Cray taking down someone else every two issues, because it was a really fun format for the first half of the series.
Absolutely. I miss it.
Final DC book is also the final issue of the Young Animal series, Eternity Girl, not Eternally Girl.
I think I probably didn't pay enough attention to this book to really give it.
Magdalene Visaggio wrote this one with art by Sunny Liu and colors by Chris Chukri. And this was about a one-time superhero whose powers were, like, elemental based, but basically she learns she can't die. When someone offers her the opportunity to die, but to do that she has to destroy everything, she takes it.
Yeah, she's like, super. Sign me up.
And so this is basically what stops her from destroying the entire world, to destroy herself, so that, you know, how can she be convinced to continue living her utterly miserable life? And this started out super, like, you know, very openly talking about suicide. I think it I was worried how they were going to stick the landing. I think they definitely did. Yeah. I enjoyed this as a finale to this series.
And the art's really gorgeous. Like, doing something, like, Sunny Liu is really great at something a bit more experimental, and, like, the page layouts are really great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really understand this, like, Afro DJ character, but whatever.
He's been in the last few issues.
Yeah.
I think this was a fun little 6-issue series, and one of the better things that Young Animal did in the last year. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be looking for more by this creative team in the future.
For sure.
Or them separately, for sure. Cool. That's it for DC, Image, and Marvel. Now we move over to a handful of books published by other publishers this week, starting with another finale. Lots of comics ending this week, which is always good because it means I don't have to keep them on my pull list anymore.
Yes, please.
Bloodshot Salvation. It brings to a close Jeff Lemire's long run with the character Bloodshot.
I am going to miss it.
Yeah, and we had art by Doug Braithwaite on this one with colors by Jordi Belair. We have the reunion of Bloodshot and Magic and his daughter as he comes back from the future where he's been sent from hell. It's been a ridiculous final arc to this story.
It's been over the top.
But I thought, after how solid, especially this Bloodshot Salvation run has been, I thought this ending was a bit stock standard action comic.
I agree, but I think it's so hard to do an ending in superhero comics and for leave sure. it open-ended for the next person.
Yeah.
That's one of the key problems with superhero comics. And I think he did a good job. I think that the sort of new status quo for the family is good. I like the character development that he managed to do throughout the whole series. The new sort of additions into the Valiant universe. I think it was really good.
Yeah. Now that it's finished, I highly recommend everyone go back and read through all of Lemire's Bloodshot run from the beginning.
Absolutely.
It's a really, really great, different kind of superhero story that has already kind of been... We're already seeing a cover version of elements of it in what Donny Cates is doing with Venom.
Absolutely.
I think this will be quite an impactful, influence-wise comic in the future.
Yep. Also, the preview of the new arc of Ninjak in the back by Christos Gage.
Ninjak in the back.
Roberto Della Torre looks amazing.
How good is that art?
Look how gorgeous that is. That's the first time that I've seen a... is it Ninja K or Ninjak? I'm always just going to call him Ninjak. His ninja skills are very much on display. Good sword play.
Very cool stuff.
Love it.
Lots of stabbing through the neck.
Yes, please.
Necks are dumb.
Who needs them? Not me. I barely have one.
You know what I do need, though, Siobhan?
Oh, man.
I need an issue like this every week, please.
Every week to just reignite my love of the medium, to remind me why I love comic books, to fulfill me.
These next two issues that I'm about to talk about, both of them had me, and like, I had the last page of them, I was like, fuck, like I just swore loudly and just was just like, this is what I want out of a comic.
Yes.
The first of which is She Could Fly from Berger Books and Dark Horse. This is number 2 of 4 of a new series written by a new comic book writer, previously was a, and still is a TV writer,
okay,
Christopher Cantwell, and one of the podcast favorite artists, Martin Morazzo, who we see on Ice Cream Man and
Incredible, the Something Sublime.
Electric Sublime.
Electric Sublime. Colors by Miroslav Merva.
Yeah. And this book is about a girl who whose head always shows her the worst person that she could be.
Yes.
Basically, she always can see visions of her killing everyone that she is close to and loves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously that's a horrible way to live your life.
Yes.
But she's,
and it's a real, like, it's a real mental illness.
And she's become obsessed with a character who was able to fly in, mm-hmm, in the first issue, who met her who just randomly exploded,
yes,
at the end of last issue. And she's obsessed with this story and keeps bothering her family about it because this is the only thing that kind of brings her some level of peace, is investigating it more and more and talking about it, mm-hmm, with somebody, but no one will listen. And so she decides to start investigating it herself. And this ties her into another couple of characters that we've been seeing in this series. One of those is a man who worked for the government.
He's a physicist.
Physicist.
Who's on the run with his favorite prostitute.
Yeah. And there are people on the run to try and take him out. Mm-hmm. And now
then also her grandma is somehow involved. Her grandma, who appears to be some kind of Buddhist monk who has reappeared in her life after 20 years of being missing.
Yeah. And also sees visions herself. It's
amazing.
It's so good. There's so much going on in this book, and you wonder, you know, are these disparate kind of storylines? When are we going to see them kind of, mm-hmm, cross over? And, mm-hmm, when they finally do at the end of this issue, it was so satisfying. And there's only 2 issues of this left, but like,
oh, really? Oh,
yeah, it's a 2 of 4. But I love that on the front cover, you have, you know, as most comics do, like, yeah, you know, a beautiful kind of appraisals of the contents of the comic. And we get She Could Fly as a modern day masterpiece. It's heartbreakingly beautiful and honest to its core. And then it's credited to Aaron Paul, who played Jesse on Breaking Bad.
He likes comics. And I think that's completely accurate. This book makes me like, it makes my heart ache. It makes me really feel, you know, it's like very, what's the word? No, it's gone. You know, makes me feel full of life.
Yeah, it's affirming.
Edifying. Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah, absolutely.
It's a brilliant comic.
Yeah.
I wonder if they had to edit the word bitch out of Aaron Paul's review.
Yeah, you got to assume, right?
He's still just in that character. Yeah. But yeah, this is like, if you can still find copies of this in single issue or digitally, like get it. This is what we read comics for.
Yes.
And the fact that like Martin Morazzo was able to do this as well as do one of my favorite Image books, Ice Cream Man, at the same time. We get a new issue of that this week.
Yes, please.
It's just a revelation, like, to him. The colors are excellent. I love, mm-hmm, the covers.
Mm-hmm.
This book is the full package. And like, this is going to be the book that everyone will be like, fuck, Karen Berger is back.
Yeah.
Doing like, you know, modern day comic book classics, just like she was doing at Vertigo in the 80s and 90s.
Definitely this is one to pick up and trade as well.
Yeah.
Oh, man,
this is my like Christmas present for, yes, a lot of my friends this year, which is as big a praise as you can give a comic book.
Absolutely.
This is a comic book for everyone, provided they're an adult.
Yes. Yes. Do not give this to children.
No. So it's called She Could Fly. I couldn't recommend this one any higher. Mm-hmm. It's so good. The second book that also was very life-affirming this week was issue 5 of the latest volume of Strangers in Paradise.
Strangers in Paradise 25.
Written and drawn by Terry Moore.
Living legend, Terry Moore.
And one of the best comic book storytellers,
yeah,
we've got.
This whole issue was basically a conversation between two women.
And
he manages to make that, like, page-turning and gripping.
And it's not so... So, all right, so... A lot of people, and myself included, before I started reading Strangers in Paradise, and also while I was reading the first few volumes of Strangers in Paradise, I thought it was a relationship comic, and there are elements of that. But this arc especially, it's a spy comic.
It's a sexy spy comic,
and it is brilliant. the world that he's built within this comic revolving around these two characters that are like, you know, star-crossed lovers in the first few volumes.
Francine and Cachou.
And now they are together in this arc, and except
babies.
Yeah, except they've been split up while Cachou basically does one last mission. Mm-hmm. But now she's getting deeper and deeper in it, and she's betraying the people that have kind of stood by her for as long as we can remember. But basically, when she's being given kind of. She awakes from being sick at the start of this issue, and Tambi, who is kind of like the head of the is now the head of the organization that she worked for, kind of brings her up to speed of what the mission was for and why things turned the way they turned, and she does so by kind of talking about in explicit detail, like this story about Cleopatra. We learn about Cleopatra, like this in like the historical figure Cleopatra, and the fact that when Cleopatra died. She was buried in a tomb that no one's ever found. I don't even know if this is true. How much real world kind of stories link to this. But anyway, in Strangers in Paradise, archaeologists have found Cleopatra's tomb. So they think they didn't find her body, but what they did find was...
some of her math.
Yeah, like some maths that Cleopatra had been working on that she had written...
Base 5, which no one else has used, like someone else apparently discovered like this year. Whoa.
Yeah, and so anything using this maths is like so worth, like it is like so valuable to military. Mm-hmm. And so basically like it's a really, really valuable weapon. This maths equation that Cleopatra had in her tomb. And this is like told over like 10 panels.
Mm-hmm.
And I complain a lot about when that shit happens in like a Scott Snyder book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think the way that they get around it is like, one, it's not like crazy bullshit space crap.
It's interesting.
But also, Cachou is
well written.
Cachou is like this mix of like, she's an intelligent woman, but she's not on the level that Tambi is as far as this kind of realm. She has no idea
she's
what...
She's an artist.
Exactly.
She's like a bit of a loose cannon.
So not only is she like oblivious to what Tambi is talking about at first, as she continues, she's kind of like ambivalent towards it in a way and like is yawning and doesn't really care about elements of it. And it just makes it entertaining because Tambi is still... explaining to her, and we get these moments of disinterest or like shock from Cachou. I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yep.
Anyway, that's one part of this comic. The greatest story that we're telling here, which is a very Cachou-centric comic, is just phenomenal. It's so gorgeous. Good.
It's such a treat to have this in single issues again.
Mm.
Lovely.
Have you finished reading through all of the first? Yeah, you should do it.
I need to get. I still have like 5 volumes to read, which is like overwhelming, but also so exciting.
Yeah, it took me a while to read like the first 3 and then I just burned through the rest in like a couple of nights.
Yeah.
One of the best things I've ever done. Strangers in Paradise and Love and Rockets, like 2 of my favorite things that I've ever read all
They're
of.
So good.
Nancy Drew this week.
Oh, I missed this.
Well, I only read some of it.
Okay.
This is a Nancy Drew issue number 3 through Dynamite Comics.
It's Kelly Thompson doing it. Kelly Thompson does best.
Yes, Kelly Thompson writing a book with phenomenal... I keep saying phenomenal today. I don't know why. I'm listening to LL Cool J, maybe. Jensen Onge is on Saint Onge is on art with colors by Triona Farrell. It's a brilliant team. I think Kelly Thompson really nails this character. This is basically it's a teen crime book.
Yeah,
it feels explicitly marketed to teens or those who have a fondness for this genre.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and I can absolutely see why this is a great comic.
Yep.
It's just not for me. And
if you love teen girl detectives. And I do. This is a good comic for you.
And I think like a big part of me letting myself read less comics is like I never want to feel like I'm forcing myself to read something. If I'm like, oh, I could be doing anything else I'd rather be doing. And like, even though I know this is good, it's not doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
First and foremost. So I need to
own that.
Exactly. So if what I described does appeal to you, you should read this book because it's very, very well done. But it does not appeal to me. And so I will stop reading.
One thing I did read, and I did read, oh God, guys, I'm so sorry, teething babies. I read issue 2 of Clan Killers by Sean Lewis and Antonio Fuso.
Mm.
And this is like, it's so hard to explain. It's like 2 semi-abused children in ancient like medieval Ireland who are trying to kill one of their dads who's like an evil king. But to do that, they have to like go into mythology. So it's full of like banshees and other sort of classically Irish baddies. And it's actually pretty compelling. The art's really nice. The colors are really great. It's got this kind of cool, washed out, almost 90s Vertigo vibe. It's very spooky and weird. But it's very hard to explain, and I'm not sure how connected I am to the characters. I think it's probably one that I'll leave from now on. I wanted to give it issue two just to see if I really liked it, but I think probably in the long term, not for me. That's published by Aftershock.
Okay.
But I will keep an eye on both of those creators and everything that they do from here on in.
Yeah, Sean Lewis yet to do a comic that's really grabbed me, but I'm glad you're a fan.
Yeah.
Final book we're going to talk about today is from Boom Studios. It is the second last issue of Mech Cadet U. A book that I thought would go on for a long time, but looks like they're getting the final issue next month. It's written by Greg Pak with excellent art by Takeshi Miyazawa and colors by Jessica Colin. And this book is essentially like Greg Pak's kind of love story to Japanese mech TV shows and manga. It's about the son of a janitor who basically in this world you can link with these enormous robos.
From space. Space robos.
And then they've got to fight bugs called the Shag, and there's an enormous attack fleet of bugs coming to destroy Earth. And it's up to these robos to kind of like sacrifice themselves essentially to save the world. But of course the kids piloting them that have bonded with them don't want them to sacrifice themselves.
Obviously.
And I think, you know, as a whole, that sacrifice for the greater good, like, you know, trope. I like it when, you know, I liked the end of The Last Jedi where, like...
I haven't seen that.
Oh, right. Well, it's kind of like, don't kill yourself for this.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's not always the best way to go out. And I liked that we have, like, all these different perspectives of what to do in this, like, you know, world-ending situation. And there are some characters that want to die a hero and some robots that want to die a hero too. But then, you know, the heart of this book is you don't have to always be that kind of hero.
Absolutely.
I really like this book. Yeah. I'm keeping all these single issues as one to give my kids when they're a bit older, because I think this is like a great one to get them into fun space.
Yeah, for sure.
Robot comics.
Nice.
Yeah. Mech Cadet U. I'll be sad to see it go, but it looks like it's going to end on a really high note. Just like this episode, Siobhan.
Absolutely.
What a great episode. Of Serious Issues. Sorry we're a little bit late this week. As we have mentioned many times, parenting has its difficulties.
Sometimes it's hard.
And yesterday, when I was about to leave the house, I got a call from Matilda's daycare that she had cried so much that she threw up.
But that was good because I was very, very tired yesterday because Shatterstar had cried so hard that he passed out and then also cried so hard that he threw up.
It's an epidemic.
The night, so I was in no shape. I was bad today. Oh boy.
Shatterstar is getting his. What teeth is he getting at the moment?
I don't think it's quite a molar, but it's one of the further back.
The eye teeth, when they get.
Ugh.
So the molars are pretty bad, but the in between, after that, the in between teeth, the eye teeth, that's the worst.
Is that the worst?
So it only gets worse.
I know. That's when I'm realizing. I was like, oh, teething's bad, but it's not that bad. Now I'm like, oh, teething is awful.
It's funny that, like, you know, for. A lot of teething chat going on. There was an issue of Baby Teeth that came out this week by Donny Cates. Neither of us are reading that series.
Mm.
Could have been a great segue.
We might have been able to learn something about teeth.
I doubt that's what the comic is about.
Same.
But if you have any teething remedies, you know, there's like those weird like amber necklaces that don't teeth on them. You just put them on their necks. And
yes, I have one because someone gave it to me.
Because you have hippie friends.
But I hate my baby wearing a necklace.
Siobhan hates a baby.
No, God, no. I love my baby. I hate making my baby look like a little hippie.
Right, yeah. But what's the science behind that?
It's not science. It's magic. Which is the problem. And I don't know how much it worked. And also I was afraid of him choking himself in his sleep.
Yeah. All valid things to think about.
Anyway, amber necklaces.
Did you get Bonjela?
Yeah.
That shit's pretty good.
Loading him up.
Yeah. Have you ever put it on yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a mouth ulcer? Yes, please.
Oh, Bonjela, right. Forever. Okay, cool. All right, fun. Cool, guys. Well, that was some extra teething talk for all your true fans out there. If you want to find us online, we can find us at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast. Or again, join our Patreon group. Support us on Patreon. Ooh. Give us money for Bonjela.
Yes, please.
For ourselves, not for our babies. Yeah. Is that numbing? Or once you get
drinking
hooked.
Just mainlining it.
I love not being able to feel my tongue. It's patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. We have a Facebook group too, where you can discuss this episode and all the comics within it.
It's been fun.
facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. If you are someone that listens to podcasts on Spotify, you may have heard Siobhan and I talking about PayPal in a bunch of ads.
Love PayPal.
So yeah, I mean, if you haven't heard them, try and find them. I don't know if they're Australian exclusive or not, but that was fun to do.
Yeah, it was cool.
You can find us on Twitter at @serious_issues, or individually, I'm at @levdog, D-A-W-G at the end there, and Siobhan is Siobhan C-B-G.
It's me.
Got some other podcasts out there, should you choose to want to listen to them. I got Hey Fam, which is also on the Planet Broadcasting Network. This week, as soon as I finish uploading this episode, I'm going to go do a special sneak preview of the new Nintendo game, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Oh.
So we're going to be giving our full reports on that this week, which is very exciting.
That's cool.
Of course, all the other ones, Old Raps and...
Is the Mitchin still going?
Kind of, sure. Hmm. And all the small games. There's a bunch of them. They're fun.
Yeah.
Go listen to them. Thank you so much for listening to this one, though. And see you next week when we read a bunch of other comics. We got a new one, a new series by Bendis. Like, he's a creator-owned one.
Yes, please.
Really?
Yeah, sure. Why not? It's got Alex Maleev.
Yeah, that's true. Edge of Spider-Geddon, the new Spider-Man event starts.
I don't want that.
In which Jason Latour did art today for Spider-Ben.
Yes, please.
So Uncle Ben is a Spider-Man.
Okay,
in one of those universes?
Sold again.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
There's a new Terminator book that Dark Horse are putting out.
Okay.
Called To the Terminator Sector War.
I've only just watched the first two Terminator movies.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. Terminator 2 is great.
It's the best, right?
Guys, it's so good. Have you seen that movie?
Don't see any other ones.
No, I don't want to.
There's a book about Woody Harrelson's character in Solo, Star Wars Solo, coming out. Star Wars Beckett comes out this week. I don't know about that.
Is he like Woody Harrelson?
Somewhat.
Stoner bro.
Would that translate to the comic medium?
Maybe.
Maybe. I've also got some Serious Issues favorites coming with new issues. We've got new Fence, Flavor, Gideon Falls, and Ice Cream Man.
That's a good week.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll see you next week for a great issue, great episode featuring lots of good issues. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.